Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto. It's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang, Gatestone, Newsweek, and The Hill joins me because we're turning our conversation to South Korea, the visit of the president of South Korea, President Moon, to the Oval Office to discuss affairs with the new president, Joe Biden. And this is important because of the ambition of the president of South Korea to in some fashion find a way forward with North Korea these last years. We welcome Bruce Kligner, senior research fellow at the Heritage Foundation, to help us understand how President Moon is going to live the last year. But Gordon, I start with you because your Hill piece says that President Moon has reason to be disappointed in his visit to the Oval Office. Why so, Gordon?
Well, there are a number of things that President Moon wanted, but the most important was he wanted the Biden administration to start vigorous diplomacy with North Korea. And the Biden team just reiterated their stand on this, and that is there's going to be practical, calibrated diplomacy, which means that not much is going to happen because the Biden team is not going to unilaterally give up on U.S. and U.N. sanctions to please Pyongyang.
Bruce, a good evening to you. Is this a surprise to President Moon, or was he expecting to be disappointed when he traveled all this way?
Well, he shouldn't have been surprised. The Biden administration has reiterated publicly that it's going to continue pressure. It's going to continue enforcement of U.N. resolutions and U.S. law until North Korea takes steps towards denuclearizing, as they're required to do by 11 U.N. resolutions, or at least come back to negotiations and incorporate benefits and requirements into a comprehensive nuclear accord. So President Moon got some things that he liked, some commitment to dialogue and permanent peace on the regime. He got some economic and other benefits. And he sort of was able to walk away without criticizing China by name, as the U.S., I think, was looking for. So there was a bit of something for everyone in the summit statement.
But, Bruce, a detail here. President Moon would have known beforehand, right, that he was not going to get something. This was not a surprise to him.
Right. Everything would be worked out ahead of time at the working level or at senior working level before the summit statement. So President Moon was looking for sanctions relief or being allowed to provide large-scale economic benefits to the North. And the Biden administration, like the Trump administration, had said they're not willing to do that. So Moon only has a year left in his term, so he's desperate or at least hopeful for some kind of dialogue with Pyongyang. But so far, the regime has been rejecting repeated South Korean and U.S. attempts at talking, let alone formal negotiations.
Gordon, you have a question for Bruce.
Bruce, of course, we focus on diplomacy with North Korea. But one of the surprising things from the documents that were issued at the end of the summit was the strong emphasis on the alliance, the U.S.-South Korea military treaty. If you could talk a little bit about this, because this seems to me to be an important element in making sure the U.S. has a strong relationship with the South after Moon leaves.
Exactly. The alliance really took pride of place in the joint statement, and I'm sure in the meetings. And there was a very moving ceremony where a 94-year-old U.S. veteran of the Korean War was awarded the Medal of Honor by President Biden, and President Moon was in attendance. That may be the first time a foreign leader participated in a Medal of Honor ceremony. And what I thought was just great was this 94-year-old man who was brought in a wheelchair. He stood up to receive his medal, and when an aide tried to offer him a walker for support, he pushed it aside. He was tall and proud. That was a great moment. But on the alliance, they welcome the successful completion of the special measures agreement. This is what's often called a burden sharing agreement that had been successfully completed. And I think also important is that Moon accepted the conditions-based transition of operational control of South Korean forces. He'd been pushing for getting that back from the UN command prior to the end of his term, and maybe he's realizing that it's just not going to happen.
Bruce, the puzzle here, though, is about the deployment of U.S. forces to South Korea. For some years, I was under the impression that that was in doubt, that there might be a moment when South Korea was going to ask the U.S. to leave. Is that now history? Is the U.S. presence in South Korea fixed again?
Well, I think it has been fixed for quite some time. I mean, President Bush and Obama both personally committed to maintaining 28,500 U.S. military personnel in South Korea. And South Korean administrations have consistently sought a strong alliance, whether conservative or liberal. I think those who are adopting a Yankee go home kind of attitude were really sort of extreme left. Perhaps the most recent threat was on the U.S. side when President Trump had said if we didn't get enough money to not only offset, but he was seeking to make a profit off the stationing of U.S. forces in Korea. If we didn't get enough money, that we would reduce or remove our forces, and that obviously never happened. So now with the successful completion of those SMA negotiations, as they're called, you know, that's certainly off the table.
Gordon?
One of the things that is important for Moon is, as you point out, he's only got a year left in office. And it seems that with his deep unpopularity, he's not going to be able to assure another progressive president as successor. It seemed one thing that Biden did do was do nothing to help Moon's chances for his party. If you could comment on the effect of domestic South Korean politics on the summit we saw on Friday.
Right. Well, a year ago, South Korea was correctly, you know, praised for such a strong initial response to the COVID. They maintained a relatively low number of cases compared to other countries, including the United States. But since then, now the Moon administration is being criticized because of a very slow rollout of the vaccine. So a year ago, his party did very well in the National Assembly, their Congress elections. But then recently, his party lost two major mayor elections, Seoul and Busan. And he and his ruling party are suffering really plunging approval ratings. And that sets up perhaps a conservative victory a year from now in a presidential election. So Moon was looking for assurances that he could get more vaccines from the United States. And he did get that to some degree. The president, President Biden, pledged to provide vaccines to for the entire 585,000 South Korean forces in the military, as well as some agreements on providing additional vaccines. So that may play well with the domestic audience in South Korea, or certainly Moon will play it up.
The other capital in the Korean Peninsula, Pyongyang. What about this meeting either pleases them or disappoints them? What can we expect their reaction to this meeting?
Well, I certainly don't think it pleases them. If they were looking for a joint statement along the lines of what Moon had been advocating of an early, in my view, premature peace declaration ending the Korean War without any concessions from the North or any indications of the U.S. acquiescing to reducing sanctions and offering large-scale economic benefits, they're not going to get that. So they may just be quiet in their response, or they may issue a strongly worded criticism from some senior official. You know, whether they'll do a provocation or not, they are likely to do that anyway, because in the first year of any U.S. or South Korean administration, they do something strongly provocative, and then they usually blame Seoul or Washington for it. So if they were to light off a you know, missile or a nuclear test tomorrow, many would blame the U.S. for not providing sufficient concessions to the North. But Pyongyang would have done it anyway.
A corollary, Beijing, or they have anything to be pleased about or disappointed about in this meeting in the Oval Office?
Well, perhaps a bit neutral. The two countries did criticize intimidation of Taiwan and the belligerent actions in the South China Sea, but then they didn't mention China by name. And that's a disappointment when compared with the U.S.-Japanese joint statement after Prime Minister Suga's visit to the White House last month. So, I mean, we're criticizing the behavior but not naming the perpetrator. So some in South Korea are seeing this as a bold move by Moon and wondering if China will take action against this strong criticism of China. I see it a bit more, the glass is half empty, in that, you know, South Korea was not willing to even criticize Beijing by name.
Gordon, we have 30 seconds left if you have a quick question.
Bruce, it seems that although the emphasis in Trump's North Korea policy is different than Biden's, there seem to be some real consistent elements to U.S. policy towards North Korea, administration in and administration out. How do you see it?
30 seconds.
I think so. There's only, you know, so many tools in the toolbox. We've really tried everything before with North Korea. So it'd be really hard for any administration to come up with something that was totally new, as the Biden administration is claiming.
Bruce Klingner, Senior Research Fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto. America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Here's the truth. You could literally be adored by everyone and then come home and still get completely ignored by your own cat. It's classic cat behavior. But new Shiba Premium Puree is a lickable treat that changes all that. They're protein-rich, made with bone broth, and have the smooth, creamy texture cats go crazy for, especially when it's hand-fed. Yeah, it's more than a treat. It's a fast pass to favorite human status. So feed your cat Shiba and go from totally ignored to truly adored in just 12 days, guaranteed, or your money back. Learn more at Shiba.com.